Sgt. Pepper's not my favorite Beatles album, and it wasn't even my first favorite Beatles album. Like a lot of people born in the 60s, I think my favorite Beatles album was an accident. It came to me just because I found it in a babysitter's record collection. So that was Magical Mystery Tour. But as a person who's been writing about music since I was a teenager, you know, Sgt. Pepper is one of those touchstones. It's one of those, it's like a biblical book. And I do love every song on it. There's no arguing that it's a great album and that it was an incredible benchmark. But I think that surveying sort of the impact of Sgt. Pepper on younger generations, starting with my own generation, I guess Generation X or whatever you'd call it, and then moving on to like younger musicians today, they're still very influenced by the Beatles, but I don't know how important Sgt. Pepper as an entity, as an album, is to them. And I think that's interesting because it's always held up as this kind of holy text. And in a weird way, it's like it's as impactful as it ever was, and yet in a different way now. There's a couple of reasons why Sgt. Pepper is still important. One is that the songs are still, you know, really important individually. There's so many great songs on that record, and you can hear sort of strains of them in a lot of different music today, whether it's, you know, A Day in the Life, the kind of studio stuff that happens in A Day in the Life, some of the Elephant Six bands like Of Montreal or Apples in Stereo are playing around with sounds like that. More kind of music hall songs like Fixing a Hole or When I'm 64, you can kind of hear that in like a Rufus Wainwright or some of the people who are doing kind of neo-vaudevillian stuff. And then, of course, like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, of course, the great psychedelic song. So the whole tradition of psychedelic music, which continues, is influenced by that strain. So all the experimenting they did on that record, I think still has an effect, but I don't know how many people, it would be interesting to know, like how many people in their 20s are sitting down and listening to it from beginning to the end. The whole debate over whether the album it should exist or, you know, does exist is, it's somewhat a bit of a smokescreen in that, you know, not everyone reads novels, but the people who read them still love them and treasure them, and I think it's the same with the albums, you know. I think that while absolutely we're living in a new era of singles and downloads and all that, I think the album as a form is still beloved by artists particularly. And so looking at, you know, the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper plays a huge role in sort of sanctifying the album as an entity and for better or worse. And I don't even know if that's what the Beatles would have intended. You know, I get the feeling if John Lennon were around today, he might not be that excited about people holding up Sgt. Pepper as a benchmark or, you know, like holding it up as this great holy text. I think he was someone who got more and more interested in breaking those things down as he went, as he got older. And, you know, so it's kind of funny. It's like it's such an important moment in pop history, and yet it's one you always want to argue with as well. I mean, Sgt. Pepper was a huge landmark for pop musicians and for the best. I mean, the great sort of titanic rivalry of the 60s is the Beatles versus the Beach Boys or Brian Wilson, as we really think about it now, with the great album Pet Sounds in connection. Then, you know, then comes Sgt. Pepper and then Wilson, his attempt to make a response, which, fell on the rocks, which is Smile. So the fact that the quality of pop, this is how, you know, this is mainstream pop. We're not even getting into the, you know, later era when there was art rock and prog rock, all of which again could be connected with the legacy of Sgt. Pepper. But this was like AM radio, teenager, you know, stuff. And the quality of it and the ambitiousness of it, I think really is impossible to argue with. You can't remake that legacy. It's at a high point. Everyone was responding to the Beatles at that time. Everyone was trying to make their version of the Beatles. And Sgt. Pepper, the idea of a unified album, it was hardly the first. I mean, Frank Sinatra was making concept albums back in the day. You know, it's not the first, but I think it set a new kind of level. Paul Simon and Garfunkel Bookends was a response to Sgt. Pepper. And then, of course, later came the kind of era of the laborious, overblown concept album. But that's not really the legacy of Sgt. Pepper. It's more like the great, sharp, conceptual structuring of, like, The Who's best albums, you know? The Kinks, their best albums. It was just the catalog was so rich at that time, and the Beatles were spurring everybody on. I think everything... I was going to say, like, everything John Lennon did was thoughtful. That's not true. But I think when you're working at such a high level as a songwriter and as a kind of a pop conceptualist, I mean, we think about the 60s as the era of the counterculture, the era of great social protest and social change. But it was also the era of rock or guitar-driven pop becoming art, you know. And what's important to think about there is that it never lost the pop part. You know, what makes those mid to late 60s Beatles albums so great is that they're still completely catchy. They're still completely great on the radio. They work as candy and as meat, you know. And I think that was a time when the divisions that kind of came about later in rock, particularly between kind of underground or art rock versus more mainstream stuff, they didn't exist in the same way. And so you had this really, really incredibly high quality, sonically high quality. I mean, the production obviously revolutionary with George Martin. The songwriting was amazing. Everything about it was just conceptually was so well done. But it was well done in the same way that, like, a great mid-century modern house was well done. You know, it was functional too, and that's what just makes it unique in the history of popular music. And the very first time I remember really hearing the Beatles, or actually that's not true, one of my first memories of the Beatles was when I was a kid and I had started to get into pop music. You know, and you want your parents, at that phase, I was not a teenager yet, I wanted my parents to kind of understand. And my parents were older, they were born, they were not of the rock era at all. So I remember very vividly sitting in my living room and something came on the television that was like a promotion for a retirement fund or something. And the song was When I'm 64. So this was probably like sometime in the, I don't know, late 60s, maybe mid 70s or early 70s or something like that. And I was like, Mom, listen, that's the Beatles. Look, they're on TV. They're being played for this program about retirement or something. And I was so excited because to me it was like I could show my mom that pop music was cool and had a bigger impact than some stupid teenage thing. And I think that's the Beatles. You know, when I often think about, like, why do the Beatles last so much? In a weird way, like, their legacy is so much stronger than even, like, the Rolling Stones, or certainly than the Kinks or the Who or any of their rivals in the British invasion. And I really think the reason, and you can hear it on a lot of the Sgt. Pepper songs, is because it's intergenerational music. It can appeal to children. It can appeal to older people. It's not confined to youth, and it's not even confined to, you know, like a bohemia of a certain moment. It just can be enjoyed by all. And I think that that's the key, you know, the fact that a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old can really get into the Beatles in a way where they, I mean, it would take an exceptional 10-year-old to really, really get into the Kinks, you know. I'd like to meet that 10-year-old. But that's the gift that they gave us, and that's what Sgt. Pepper has, I think. The thing about the Beatles is that they did have these four, you know, I think that as with many myths of rock or popular music, the myth of the band has been a bit taken apart in recent years. And we know that, like, rock bands are not necessarily all best friends, and they're not like these platonic units of where each person sort of has the perfect quality. But the Beatles, they did sort of have that, you know. They had the rebel and the art schoolboy and John. They had the kind of pop songwriter who could have done great at the Brill Building and Paul. They had the mystic and also the guitar geek in George. And then they had the Elmo character, the children's television show character in Ringo, and they all came together so perfectly. So there was, I mean, the way they were marketed, like you could each have your own Beatle, it actually worked in a way for other bands, even like the Stones, it didn't really work, or like the Who or the Kinks. I mean, maybe the Who, but each character, each person in that band had their own thing that they did. And even though Lennon and McCartney certainly dominated artistically, everybody brought something to the table, and it's a magical thing that many bands probably wish they could embody, but they don't.